all the platforms, he's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up, at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL, Revolution Nothing Less show, is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment. So the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show.
My name is Andy Z.
And I'm Annie Day.
This is a show about revolution. This is a show for revolution. This is a show about the whole world. And it is a show for a radically new world.
We base ourselves on the revolutionary leadership of Bob Avakian, who's brought forward a new communism, a framework to emancipate all humanity. And we're going to hear from Bob Avakian throughout today's show. In today's episode, we're going to show what's happening with the U.S.-Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people. We're going to talk about the student uprising to stop this genocide, the crossroads in this struggle, and what's needed now. We're also going to talk about the revolution that's needed to overthrow the system that's at the source of all of this. But first, and as part of that, we're going to hear from the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, directly. This is from a talk that he gave in 2012. It's a talk from which we take our name, from BA Speaks, Revolution, Nothing Less.
Let's go back to basics, to fundamentals. Stepping back and looking at the sweep of human history, many empires have risen and fallen with different peoples or nations, and in particular their ruling classes, dominating and plundering others throughout thousands of years of human history in every part of the world. In ancient times, to mention just some empires, Greece, Rome, Persia, China, Egypt. In more recent times, the British Empire dominated much of the world in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And now there is the empire of the USA and others seeking to challenge it. If it's not about anything different and better than that, if it's just about shuffling things around this way and that, but keeping in effect the relations in which some people rule over, oppress, and degrade whole other groups of people, while humanity as a whole is shrouded in ignorance and devastated by war, and the earth is plundered and ruined, if it's just about some people improving their position within this horrific system, or it's about some groups that have been down for a while having their chance to be up and to have their turn at lording it over others, then I am not interested. And neither should you be interested. We have to fight oppression under the system in the different ways it comes down on people. But our fundamental goal has to be to get beyond all this, or the horror will just keep going on, and the great majority of humanity will suffer terribly and needlessly, unless and until whoever is on top ruins and destroys things, including the environment, so completely that it's all over for everybody. But once again, the point is that in a way that was not true in previous periods in human history, there is the possibility to get beyond all that and to a much better place for humanity. But for that to happen, there has to be a growing core of people with a basic understanding of this and a firm commitment to actually fight for it, a firm commitment to be emancipators of humanity.
Today was our graduation ceremony, and we really wanted to highlight that there are no graduations going on in Gaza right now because there's a genocide happening there. And so there's no business as usual during a genocide. We walked out of our graduation ceremony.
The last 5 weeks have seen a major uprising of students against the U.S.-Israeli genocidal slaughter of Palestinian people, an uprising that has the potential to mark a whole generation. But this struggle is now at a crossroads. The horror in Gaza continues, and there have continued to be brave and creative protests. But there are big questions about how to carry this forward, how to spread this resistance from the campuses into every corner of society, defending those under attack, how to understand what's driving this nightmare and what it will take to end it. Let's go back to where this started, with resistance in the face of repression that spread like wildfire. In mid-April, Columbia University president Nemat Mennouchafik groveled before a congressional hearing aimed at slandering all the protests against this genocide as anti-Semitic.
You don't think there's evidence of anti-Semitism among professors on your faculty?
We have seen some cases, and there have been consequences.
Columbia students answered by escalating their protests in the face of this promised repression. They started a Gaza solidarity encampment. And when Shafiq moved to send the police onto campus, arresting over 100 people, students came back with a second encampment that very same day. And this set off a wave of campus resistance not seen in generations. Gaza solidarity encampments spread across the country and around the world. This reached and it gave hope to the people in Gaza, starving and under assault.
We appreciate it very much. We truly love them. Anyone who raises a flag for Palestine, we appreciate it with all our hearts. They are leaving their education. They are getting harmed. They're getting in trouble for us. We really appreciate it. We really want them to keep going. And we really want to be a part of these universities because they have stand with us. No one did that.
And it has caused millions to confront what is happening and to ask themselves what side they will stand on. The students have been met with mass arrests of over 3,000 people, slander, suspensions, and vicious brutality by police and by Zionist and fascist thugs. Students have continued to stand up, putting their futures and putting their bodies on the line, with this pouring into college graduations. At Columbia's School of Social Work graduation, one student tore up her degree on stage, while other students came up with their hands zip-tied together or with tape over their mouths. At Barnard College, graduates wore red poppies on their gowns with the names of the slain Palestinian children, and they turned their backs on the college president and dean as they spoke, while a Parents for Palestine banner was hung from the balcony. At Emerson College in Boston, 1/5 of the graduating class walked up for their degrees with fists in the air, many opening their gowns to reveal Palestinian flags. Students refused to shake the hand of the university president because of a police raid in which 100 people were arrested. At Yale, hundreds of students walked out of the graduation ceremony. For campuses that are still in session, the protests that have continued have been met with brutal repression. There were suspensions and then a massive show of police force and 47 arrests at UC Irvine after students occupied a building. In the early hours of May 16th, hundreds of police in riot gear stormed and dismantled the encampment at DePaul University in Chicago. Two students were arrested and several injured. Just this week, at the University of Michigan, police violently raided the encampment, pepper spraying people right in the eyes, hospitalizing three people and arresting four, with the school threatening felony charges. Toward the beginning of this upsurge, the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian answered the question, why is this repression coming down so harshly on the students, especially at elite colleges? Listen to his answer.
Why is this happening? Because fundamental interests of U.S. capitalism and imperialism are at stake. Because Israel plays a special role as a heavily armed bastion of support for U.S. imperialism in a strategically important part of the world, the Middle East. And Israel has been a key force in the commission of atrocities which have helped to maintain the oppressive rule of U.S. imperialism in many other parts of the world. And this repression is happening because representatives of the ruling class in this country have a definite sense that if youth, especially at elite universities, begin to seriously question and act against what this system is doing, if the system loses the allegiance of large numbers of those students, that can be a big factor in creating a real crisis for the system as a whole, as happened in the 1960s. A crisis that now more than ever, this system really cannot afford when the whole country is already being torn apart by deep divisions with bitter clashes right among the ruling powers. So, at the same time as they are bitterly divided, the ruling powers of this country are firmly united in their determination to punish and intimidate especially students at elite universities who have stepped forward to protest the genocidal slaughter of Palestinians. The ruling class is desperate to prevent opposition to its fundamental interests from spreading and involving masses of people from all parts of society. All this reveals more nakedly than in normal situations the actual dictatorship behind the outer shell of democracy of this country. And it shines a light on the strategic weakness of this system when it does lose the allegiance of major sections of the people. And this has the potential to spread to all parts of society, including among the dominant institutions of this system.
Think about what BA said. Fundamental interests of U.S. capitalism and imperialism are at stake. As I said, there are big questions now about how to go forward. The RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity just issued an open letter speaking to those questions, addressed to those who have stood up. It says that the struggle to stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide of Palestinians is at a crossroads. We need to be serious about stopping the horrific genocide now unfolding and advancing the fight to win full liberation. This means right now working to make the fear of the rulers come true, working to deepen and widen their loss of legitimacy in the eyes of millions by drawing ever more people into this struggle against the genocide. This requires uniting all who can be united, everyone who can be won to declare, stop the U.S.-Israeli genocide of Palestinians now, should be welcomed in this movement. And this needs to go on while opening up the discussion and the debate about what is driving this genocide and what is necessary to end it. The letter invites people to get seriously with the RevComs, to dig into what Bob Avakian is saying about how this genocide of the Palestinian people, how all oppression and exploitation is rooted in this system of capitalism imperialism, and how it can be ended through making revolution to overthrow this system, bringing into being a radically different and a far better system, putting an end to genocidal terror and wars once and for all. Another world is possible, and it's on all of us to make it real.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Next on today's program, we have Alan Goodman, who writes for RevCom.us on the situation in Gaza and in Israel. And he's been providing important weekly bulletins on the U.S.-funded and armed Israeli genocide in Gaza. This genocide is now in its seventh month. And not only is this almost an unspeakable terror and murder of the Palestinian people, but it has become a major factor in ripping the mask off of U.S. imperialism and its client police dog in the Mideast, the State of Israel. So I want to welcome Alan to the show. And I just want to say, Alan, your segments have been very important and people really need to be following what has actually happened there. So once again, glad to have you back on the show, Alan.
Well, thanks. I appreciate what you just said, because in the whole 7 months that I've been following the situation, this is the worst things have been. Gaza has been pushed off the front page of the newspapers. A lot of people are kind of settled into, it's a terrible situation. But again, I'm making the case in my articles, and I'm going to make it here, that a really dangerous escalation is taking shape right now. And I'm going to pose, and I know you're posing, if this is true, then all of us, especially those of us here in the belly of the beast that enables and needs Israel, have to confront and respond to that reality. So I really appreciate the chance to connect that as best I can with your audience.
Well, okay, Alan. So look, this part of the story is that Israel has created a famine in Gaza, that's reaching catastrophic proportions. But as you just said, in much of the U.S. media, the story is buried, if mentioned at all. Could you describe the situation now and how this depravity on the part of Israel is taking shape?
Well, the short answer is people are starving to death in a horrible, horrible way. Mothers don't have enough nutritional intake to produce milk to feed their babies. Any attempt to get in aid has been completely shut off now. Just to put things briefly in perspective, it took 500 truckloads of aid to keep people from starving to death before October 7th. Last week, 30 trucks a day trickled in. People do not have water to drink. Israel systematically destroyed the well water sources that people were drinking. Now they're drinking water from whatever source they can get. The disease is spreading. There's no sanitation. Throughout Gaza, children are wasting away. It's so, when you look at the pictures of children just shriveled up. And there have been famines in other parts of the world where, you know, the world, the system turned its back on people. But this is a man-made famine. This is a genocidal famine. This is a famine that's been imposed on purpose by Israel, knowing exactly what's going on, that they are starving the Palestinian people to death. And people are watching their children waste away. They're watching elderly people dying. And again, this is an imposed genocidal famine.
Yeah, and also, you know, when we were talking before, you were mentioning how Israel has also systematically destroyed any agricultural capacity within the Gaza Strip, where there was farming and there were bakeries. All of these food supplies have been cut off. But let me ask you this, Ellen, what action has the U.S. taken to stop this? What has genocide Joe Biden and his blinkered secretary, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, done as he shuttles back and forth to Israel? What have they done to actually stop this?
They haven't done anything to stop it. The short answer to what their response is that they have just sent another $1 billion worth of death machinery to impose death from the sky, missiles, tanks. I think we'll get into this a little later if we talk about the Netzarim corridor that Israel has built. And the United States has and Biden and Blinken have provided diplomatic cover for Israel. When reports emerged that the International Court of Justice might bring some of the Israeli leaders to trial for genocide, Biden denounced that as outrageous. It's not outrageous, it's a fact. And everywhere that there's public outrage, Biden is quick to say, oh, this is not a genocide. What do you call systematically starving a whole people to death? If that's not genocide, what is?
Yeah, I think this is an important point, Alan. And, you know, there's complicity here for people living in this country. And I want to just play a brief social media post of some people who did something right in the face of Anthony Blinken. Watch this.
China.
Suing
Russia was 6 years old, an Israeli killer. His brother was 6 years old. Blinken, you will be remembered as the butcher of Gaza. You will be remembered for murdering innocent Palestinians.
Alan, I just got to take a minute to talk about this Secretary Anthony Blinken. Last week, in addition to what he's doing, the war crime that's being committed, the crime against humanity that's being committed in Israel, last week he goes to Ukraine, where the U.S. is waging a proxy war using Ukraine's soldiers and the people with Russia, a war that's reaching some very dangerous places right now. But that's beyond what we want to talk about today. But what does Blinken do there? He goes into a club at night, takes out his electric guitar to play a song by Neil Young called Rockin' in the Free World.
Keep on rockin'.
This was a protest song written by Neil Young against President then Herbert Walker Bush in the 1990s, where Neil Young was talking about the reality of homeless people and how people are suffering in this in the U.S. and what the ruling class in this country is about. I'll just give you the lyrics of the first verse because it wasn't in the clip we just saw. It says this, Neil Young wrote this, "There's colors on the street, red, white, and blue, people shuffling their feet, people sleeping in their shoes, but there's a warning sign on the road ahead. There's a lot of people saying we'd be better off dead. Don't feel like Satan, but I am to them." So, all right, let's go back to our interview here, but I just had to say that I almost couldn't believe it. Look, you mentioned this earlier, Alan. In the past week, there's been reporting on the Netzarim corridor that Israel has created, as well as the creation of a buffer zone. This is important to get into. It reveals much about the genocide, and it indicates the Israeli-U.S. future intentions.
Yeah, well, you're right, and I want to get into this from a couple dimensions. One is what went into this. So what we're talking about is northern Gaza is very narrow. It's only 4 miles wide. And Israel has taken a big strip of Gaza that is a section just south of Gaza City, basically cutting Gaza in two. And this strip is heavily militarized. We'll get into that in a moment and what's the ominous agenda behind that militarization. But just to give people a feel for what went into clearing this strip tells you so much about Israel's genocidal agenda and how this is not a war between Israel and Hamas, as much as that's a dimension of it, it's fundamentally a genocidal massacre and a whole genocidal agenda against the Palestinian people. To make this corridor that runs 4 miles completely seals northern Gaza from southern Gaza, to make that 1,000 buildings were bulldozed and blown up. Farmhouses. We were talking about destroying the ability of people in Gaza to eat. And one of the buildings that was seized was the campus of Israel University. This university included a law school. It housed an institution called the Palestinian Center for the Independence of the Judiciary and the Legal Profession. On January 17th, Israel blew up that university. The university administration put out a statement charging that before blowing up their campus, Israeli troops operated out of the university and used it as a base for snipers shooting civilians, as well as a detention center where Israel was torturing seized Palestinians. Israel looted artifacts. This is the multidimensional genocide going on here. Looted artifacts, and the administration made the point that by systematically destroying, I mean literally destroying, Gaza's higher education capacity, it was a way for Israel to force all Palestinian professionals who are being trained in law, medicine, and so on to go to Europe or some other place to practice their profession. And this then fits into the whole depopulation and crushing of the Palestinian culture, community, education, and so on. One other thing, really got to mention this. The corridor includes a building which housed the Turkish Palestinian Friendship Hospital, which specialized in cancer treatment. That hospital was completely and violently shut down by Israel, including by depriving it of fuel. Thousands of cancer patients were abandoned without care. But wait, it gets even more depraved. Israel is using that hospital now as a sniper position to fire on Palestinian civilians. Now, let's just roll back the clock a minute. Al-Shifa Hospital was the largest hospital in Gaza City. That hospital was completely demolished. It is in ruins now. Hundreds of bodies of medical staff, patients, people seeking shelter were tossed by Israel into shallow graves outside the hospital. And what was the excuse for Israel doing that? You remember this, Andy. People have been following this. Israel said that underneath the hospital, you couldn't see it in the hospital, but underneath the hospital, in tunnels, Hamas was using the hospital as an operational command center. No evidence was ever produced, no meaningful evidence was ever produced that gave any credibility to that. And yet Israel destroyed the whole hospital. And now Israel has moved its troops into a seized hospital. They're not hiding in tunnels underneath it. They're up on the roof shooting people out of a hospital. And you'll find, if you don't believe me, go to revcom.us and look at the photos we have up there. This
is what we've said, unspeakable, but it's actually really happening. And another aspect of this, Alan, which we've spoken about, and, you know, we often use the word and the movement of the students in this country about the struggle in Palestine has been, and in Gaza has been, that this Israel is a apartheid state. And bisecting the Gaza Strip like this is yet building, and there's walls on either side of this corridor, is creating a smaller and smaller space through which an apartheid regime can control the population. This is really no different than the Native American reservations that the U.S. set up in the West. This is no different than the ghettos and the walls that were put around the ghettos in places like Warsaw, Poland, during World War II against the Jewish people. And that's one of the bitter ironies of all of this. So, Alan, do you have a last comment before we close out today's bulletin from you?
Just very briefly, the situation is the worst it's been. Most of the hospitals are shut down. People are starving. We discussed that. Israel is bombing and shooting up Jabalia refugee camp. Stay tuned to revcom.us and follow our coverage. But here's the thing. Our response here in the belly of the beast that's sending these bombs over to blow up hospitals and universities, we have to be in the streets. We have to be spreading the struggle. We have to measure what we do by what's going on over there.
Good point. All right, Alan, we'll see you next week.
Great.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Yeah. The people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and wanting peace? The problem isn't the protests, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Eazy-E. What was it again? Oh yeah, the police. Actors and badges protecting property in a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You could pay off Meta, you can't pay off me. Politicians who serve by any means, AIPAC, Koofy, and all the companies. You see, we sell fear around the land of the free. But this generation here is about to cut the strings. You could ban TikTok, take us out the algorithm, but it's too late. We've seen the truth, we bear witness. Seen the rubble, the buildings, the mothers and the children, and all the men that you murdered. And then we see how you spin it. Who gets the right to defend and who gets the right of resistance? It's always been about dollars and the color of your pigment. But white supremacy is finally on blast, screaming free Palestine to their home at last. We see the lies and claiming it's anti-Semitic to be anti-Zionist. I've seen Jewish brothers and sisters out there and writhing in solidarity and screaming free Palestine with them organizing and learning and finally cutting ties with a state that's gotta rely on apartheid system to uphold and occupy and violent history been repeating for the last 75. The NECPA never ended, the colonizer lied. It's students in tents posted on the lawn, occupying the quad is really against the law. And a reason to call and the police and their squad. Where this genocide land and your definition hot. Destroying every college in Gaza and every mosque. Pushing everyone in the Rafah and dropping bombs. The blood is on your hands, Biden, we can see it all. And f-
no, I'm not voting for you in the fall. Undecided, you can't twist the truth. The people out here united, never be defeated when freedom's on the horizon. Yet the music industry's quiet, complicit in their platform of silence. What happened to the artist? What you gotta say? If I was on a label, you could drop me today. I'll be fine with it, cause the heart fed my page. I want a ceasefire, a response from Drake. What you willing to risk? What you willing to give? What if you were in Gaza? What if those were your kids? If the West was pretending that you didn't exist, you want the world to stand up, and the students finally did. Let's get it.
To meet the challenge of stopping the genocide of the Palestinian people will require a broad, deep, and determined movement that is unignorable, a movement that goes deeply into what is the root cause of the genocide, the history and the system that drives this, and all the other crises that threaten the future, from the destruction of the environment to all the exploitation and oppression that torments and crushes people here and around the world. More, the solution to all of this is a real revolution to overthrow the capitalist imperialist system and replace it with a revolutionary socialist society to enable people to work and struggle together to emancipate all of humanity. Bob Avakian has qualitatively developed the scientific method and approach for that revolution in the new communism. Woven into this and sorely needed in the movements of today and the struggle ahead is a generosity of spirit and a largeness of mind. We want to play B.A. speaking about this from the interview that Sansara Taylor and I did with Bob Avakian on this show in the fall of 2022.
Yeah, well, I think largeness of mind and generosity of spirit are closely connected. Largeness of mind means that you are looking at things, you know, in a broad perspective, not narrowly, you know, but you're actually looking at things broadly and seeking, you know, also you're seeking the underlying causes of things, you know, and but also you want to learn from and encompass a lot of different things coming from a lot of different sources. That's a very important part of largeness of mind. You know, like we should be, you know, the most, you know, anxious to learn from any source that we can learn from. Even people who vehemently disagree with us, if there's something that we can learn from what they're saying, even if we have to disagree with 97% of it or more. You know, so that largeness of mind means the orientation of learning from broadly from many diverse sources, including people who do not agree with you. You know, and that's very important because it is true that even, you know, as I've said, under socialism, even reactionaries should be allowed to publish some books. I said that before the Constitution was written, which institutionalizes that. But why is that? Because you can learn. You know, I'll give you an example from my own experience. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was an official, you know, I think he was a defense secretary under Carter, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he's a major functionary and thinker of the imperialists, wrote about the Russian Revolution that the tradition of autocracy, and I'll explain that in a second, the tradition of autocracy in Russia seeped its way into the Bolsheviks, the communists, and that explains why they were repressive. Now, autocracy is a government that, you know, that doesn't allow people rights, you know, that rules by absolute authority and so on and so forth. And he said, you know, this tradition, what was he talking about in Russia? They had a whole tradition of absolute monarchs, the czars, you know, whose power was unquestioned for a long time. They were the absolute and ultimate authority in society. So that was a tradition of autocracy, so to speak. And that's what Brzezinski was talking about. So he wrote this thing and he said, you know, this applied to the Russian Revolution. This tradition and deeply seated in Russian society, you know, also influenced the Bolsheviks and led them to be repressive. And I wrote and I said, this is a bunch of bullshit, you know, because the Bolshevik Revolution was against everything that the autocracy, the czars, and every oppressive and exploitive relation in society. So this is complete bullshit. So then I thought about it for a while, and I said, well, actually, it's not complete bullshit. So, you know, when you think about it, there's probably some truth to that, you know, like Mao said about Stalin, that one of Stalin's problems methodologically was he was raised in a religious seminary where he was taught to, you know, to think in the kind of absolute wooden terms that religion trains you to think. And he said this carried over into the way he led the communist movement and the socialist society. And he upheld Stalin overall, but he said this was a serious problem with Stalin. So similarly, we could say in the Russian Revolution, there was undoubtedly influence of the character of that society, even on the people who were, to use these terms, negating that society, overthrowing it and transforming and replacing it. There was still some influence there. So then, after thinking about it, I wrote something, followed up, and said, well, he has something of a point. So this is an example where you can learn, and you have to be willing to learn from people who, you know, look, we're on the completely on the opposite side of everything, and when it comes down to it, we'll be on the opposite side of the barricades, so to speak, from the Brzezinskis of the world. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn anything from them. And that's why I said even reactionaries should be allowed to write books in socialist society, because they may point out some things about what we're doing that we would actually want to understand are bad, even though where they're coming from is trying to get rid of what we're seeking to do. You see what I'm saying? So that has to do with largeness of mind. Now, generosity of spirit is closely connected to that, you know, but also involves the whole point we've been talking about. What is this revolution for? It's not for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just to tear down other people in order to climb over them. That's what Lenin meant when he said, everyone who makes revolution from the standpoint of, they had their chance, now it's my turn to have a go, does it from the point of view of the petty bourgeoisie. And what he meant is it's characteristic of the petty bourgeoisie. They feel squeezed. They want to climb over others to get a better position. So that's not what this revolution is about. It's not about getting climbing over others. It's not about taking revenge. Even when people have done terrible things, it's not about taking revenge on people. If people have committed terrible crimes, and the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America institutionalizes this, there are legal means in which they should be tried and, if convicted, punished for the crimes that they've committed, including against crimes against humanity and war crimes and the rest of it. But it's not a matter of individuals taking revenge. If we go down that road, it's the same problem I was just speaking to. Then you get back to the ends justify the means. Any means are justified because of what we suffered. And let's be honest. When you talk about how we got to struggle with masses of people, this is going to be one of the sharpest focus of struggle, especially with people who have been so badly f***ed over under the present system, including by people who do have a little bit better position than them. I mean, this is one thing also going way back to the woke thing. What should our focus be on, micro or macro? You see, macro means the large picture. Micro means the smallest picture. A lot of these people are focused on all the microaggressions. Okay, nobody should put up with people being racist toward them or, you know, patriarchal toward them, misogynist. Nobody should put up with that in their personal relations. But where is your eye focused? It should be focused on the big macro, the big picture of what's going on to masses of people. That should be where your orientation and your focus is. You know, on the thousands of people that are, you know, the thousand people who are murdered every year by the police, a disproportionate number of Black, Brown, and Native American, many of them unarmed. The millions of people who are mass incarcerated, the people who are discriminated against, segregated, denied any kind of a decent life, forced to live in poverty or even homeless, the women who are subjected to battering and rape and all the rest of it. Those are the bigger things that our attention should be focused on in terms of uprooting all of this. And yes, with it, we'll transform these microaggressions too. But our focus has to be on the big picture. The macro means big, the big picture. So this is also very important. What was I saying before? Generosity of spirit. Okay, let's get back to that. Well, you can see how this figures in here. You know, it's, what is this revolution about? Why should we have generosity of spirit? Because we're emancipators of humanity. We're not about, you know, settling scores. We're not about, you know, ripping into people for things they've done wrong. If they've done wrong, they need to be held accountable. But we also need to struggle to transform people. That's what this revolution is about. And The generosity of spirit flows from that. If you understand that we're seeking to uproot, it both flows from it and is necessary to reinforce it. But let me put it that way. If you understand that what we're out to do is to uproot all this exploitation and oppression, then you should have a largeness of mind, including learning from everything you can learn and everyone you can learn from, but also a generosity of spirit, recognizing that people, contrary to what's often said these days, people can and do change. I can sit here and give you examples of multiple people that I know, including myself for that matter, but other people I know from the 60s and so on and since, who've undergone major transformation, major changes, people who are into really bad, you know, or supporting really bad things, people who were Goldwater supporters back in the 1960s who became radicals and revolutionaries through the course of the 60s, soldiers who, you know, in Vietnam committed terrible atrocities that I was, as I've said before, you know, go down the line. People can transform. And one of the dimensions of generosity of spirit is recognizing that. And then, okay, it's perfectly consistent with that, and in fact, an expression of it, that you're going to struggle like hell with people to get them to transform, exactly because you do recognize that they can and that they need to. You're not going to be liberal. It doesn't do any good to be liberal with people. People don't need any more social workers. You know, I'm not saying all social workers do bad things, just to be clear, but that's not what communists need to be. That's not what people recognize a need for overturning this whole system, uprooting it, and bringing a different system into being. Don't need to be, you know, don't need to be just, you know, giving people some kind of solace or something, or, you know, being liberal with them. When people talk bullshit, they should be told they're talking bullshit because it's harmful. It's harmful to them, but it's harmful to much, much greater numbers of people when people are caught up in bullshit. So why should we hesitate to struggle with people? If you have respect for people, you will struggle with them. It's a lack of respect for people if you don't struggle with them when you know they're doing things that are f***ed up. If you really respect people and understand the potential for them to change, you will struggle like hell with people. And we can all sit here and know that we've all been struggled with. You know, by people, you know, who at the time had a better, you know, were coming from a better place than us. You go back to anybody's history. You land, you know, you get where you are now to being an emancipator of humanity. You weren't born that way and you didn't spontaneously go that way. People fought with you. People struggled with you and you learned from them. So, you know, to me, it's the highest respect for people if you struggle, not if you just try to tear them down. You know, not if all you're concerned is like proving that you're superior to them or that they're just worthless and irredeemable and all this kind of bullshit. But if you actually understand that they can and must change, then you have enough respect for them to struggle like hell with them, to actually act in their own interests and the interests of the broad mass of people and ultimately all humanity. So you're going to struggle like hell with them for that.
We'll be right back. What's up, everyone? This is Raphael. I'm out here at UCLA today. As you can see, there is a protest happening behind me, a pro-Palestine protest. Actually, a student walkout that was called because tomorrow, the president of this university, Gene Black, he's actually being called before the congressional so-called anti-Semitism hearings that have been happening for months now. This is happening tomorrow. He's going to be testifying at that. And this is, again, this is one of the big lies that's been used to demonize this movement and justify the suppression on these college campuses of protesters, basically saying that all these, student encampments are full of anti-Semitism. Biden's running this out. These fascists in Congress are running it out. It's fucking bullshit. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. Opposing Israel, criticizing Israel, trying to stop a genocide is not attacking the Jewish people as a whole. So, but I'm also here today because I want to let everyone know that the RevComs, myself included, Sansara Taylor, others, are going to the National Conference on Palestine happening in Detroit this weekend. This is a really important opportunity to get together with others, to discuss strategies, to brainstorm, to make connections. And this is happening in a moment where, you know, the struggle for Palestinian liberation, the struggle to stop this genocide is at a crossroads. The genocide is escalating. You know, they've invaded Rafah. They've cut the Gaza Strip in half with a road. They're bombing Gaza City. They're attacking Jenin in the West Bank. You know, they're slaughtering people all over Gaza right now as we speak with USA bombs, weapons, missiles, artillery, bullets. And, you know, it's really important, you know, at this moment that we not just comfort ourselves with the idea that, you know, we just have to keep the resistance going. We're almost at victory. No, these Zionists, fully backed by the United States, are right now aiming to totally ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip, to establish a permanent Israeli presence there, you know, to carry out what amounts to a final solution of their so-called Palestinian problem. So it's really important that we get together and we actually be strategic and we actually think through, what's it really going to take to stop this genocide? And even more than that, what's it going to take to stop, you know, genocides and ethnic cleansing and wars and occupations for empire that have been going on, you know, for a long time. And the Palestinian people have been resisting this for over 100 years. But we really got to ask ourselves, what's it going to take to put a stop to this, to uproot the system that is at the root of it, capitalism, imperialism, once and for all? You know, and that is going to take a revolution based on the new communism. So we're going to this conference trying to strengthen the resistance against this genocide, you know, to unite everyone who can be united, to go out all summer long and spread this resistance far and wide in the communities of the oppressed everywhere, you know. And at the same time, we want to open up a discussion, a debate, a conversation, and win as many people as we can to our understanding of what really is at the root of this, the system of capitalism, imperialism, and the only fundamental solution to what the Palestinian people face, what the people in Haiti and the Congo and the people who are oppressed right here in this country are facing, which is, you know, the system of capitalism, imperialism, you know, and the only solution to that, a real revolution.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week. With the warning.
troubled times. We live in troubled times.